Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ontario Society of Occupational Therapists New OTs on the Block podcast, a space where we will be discussing everything that new occupational therapy graduates need to know to transition into the workforce. My name is Lindsay, and I'm a second-year OT student at the University of Toronto, and I will be your host for this series. Each week, I'll be interviewing knowledgeable guests to equip you with the knowledge and confidence that you need to succeed after graduation. For our first episode, I'm very excited to be here today with five amazing new OTs. They all graduated last year and are here to share their experiences of being a new grad, offer advice, and answer your questions. So thanks, guys, for making the time to be here today. I also want to thank all the second-year OT students from across Ontario for submitting your questions. We had so many great questions that this Q&A is actually going to be broken up into part one and part two. Some questions will also be addressed in later episodes, such as those relating to getting a provisional license or what hiring managers are looking for in cover letters or in interviews. So stay tuned for those episodes coming up soon. Before we jump into part one of questions, I'm going to start by having the new grads introduce themselves. So can you guys please tell us a little bit about yourselves, including what you're doing now and if you're working? If so, what's your role and when you started?
Hi, I'm Maya. I am a new grad working at Covenant House Toronto, which is a youth homeless shelter, and I'm working as their occupational therapist and youth skills program coordinator, and I started in December.
Hi, I'm Emily. I'm working at Providence Healthcare, which is in inpatient rehab in East Toronto. I've been there since September. I was initially on their stroke and neuro unit, and now I'm on their inpatient ortho amputee unit.
I'm Emma. I'm a school health occupational therapist. I work in the west end of the GTA, so I work with kids from kindergarten all the way up to grade 12 and helping them access the curriculum if they need a little bit more support to do that.
My name is Brett. I work for Functionability. It's a community-based rehab company, private practice. And my essential role is to do OT assessments and treatment for clients that were involved in motor vehicle accidents.
And my name is Leah Paluin, and just like Brett, I'm also working in a private community OT company, working mainly with people who've been in motor vehicle accidents, providing assessment and treatment. And thank you, Lindsay, for having us today.
Thanks, guys. So we're going to jump right into questions. And the first topic that we're going to cover is the National Certification Exam. I know I'm really nervous about it, and I suspect that other second-year OTs are feeling the same way because I received a ton of questions about it. So the first question I'm going to ask you guys is, what is the best way to prepare for it?
I would say that the best way to prepare is lean into your study habits. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Reach out to your classmates. Share resources with each other. Don't spend your entire life studying, because there's only so much studying you can do in a day and you just reach a saturation point. So keep working on your life balance. Study with friends.
What kind of resources are out there for studying? Like, are there any like prep manuals or like practice questions? I don't know.
Yeah, tons. I think like a good investment was the practice questions that you could purchase.
COT provides it on their website.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so purchase those and just kind of use those as guidance of where your weak spots are in your knowledge, because then you can really direct where you're actually studying. So that's essentially how I tackled it, and just redid those questions over and over again until I felt really comfortable with them.
And I think what I found kind of most important, obviously content is important, but knowing how they want you to answer the question too.
Sure. Yeah.
Because with a lot of them, since they're multiple choice, it technically could be, like, all the answers could be correct sometimes. So just kind of going through those practice questions and figuring out what CAOT wants from you, I found very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Another resource for accessing CAOT formatted questions are in the back of your prep modules.
Yeah.
They have similar formatted clinical judgment-based questions that are like very true to what you'll find on the exam as well.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. That's really helpful. I think a lot of us don't even know kind of where to look or where to start, and it's like, is our what we learned in our program actually even relevant? Do you guys have any tips for studying if you're working full-time, like for those of you that got jobs right away? And if so, how did you manage your time?
So, I started working 3 weeks after I guess, ending school. So what I did is I spent probably like an hour a night just going over like questions and things I wasn't comfortable with. Then the week before the exam, I took the entire week off, except for seeing like three clients maybe. I didn't think it was necessary. At the time, I found it was necessary, but now looking back on it, I definitely didn't have to do that because I didn't spend most of my time studying. But I think just for me, having that consistent time kind of scheduled into my day, I found helpful to study for the exam.
Yeah, and I felt the same way as Emma. I was working full-time like from the beginning of September, and I was super nervous about how I was going to manage it, and I was moving apartments at the same time, so I was high stress, but it was totally manageable. Tried to do an hour a night like Emma, but that wasn't always what happened, especially when you are working full-time. You're tired some nights, or every night. So what I found is I just sacrificed my weekends a little bit more and cut back on social activities and tried to study with friends instead of like going out with friends. And I guess another big thing was I think I took just the day off before the exam, and like Emma, I didn't necessarily use it to study. It was more of just like a de-stress, relax kind of day. So I think just making sure you have time for self-care.
Should have definitely did that.
Yeah. So I guess knowing yourself and kind of what you need and talking to your work about what they can accommodate for. And I guess just like take comfort in the fact that you are working. So your clinical judgment and your clinical reasoning, you can absolutely apply to the exam.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and the practice knowledge you're getting from wherever you're working. So I was able to answer most of the stroke and neuro related questions just based off of my work. So your time at work isn't going to waste in terms of studying. You're getting practice, you're using your judgment. So don't feel like you're missing out. When I remember seeing Snapchats of people like studying at 10 in the morning, like at the library in a weekday, and I was like, this can't be me. Like, and you kind of just go into that panic mode. So try not to do that, and just take some comfort in the fact that you can apply what you're learning at work to the exam.
This is probably obvious, but I don't think you'll ever be fully prepared for the exam because the scope is too broad and the questions are too broad, and you possibly can't research and study everything and even remember anything.
No.
So I think going off what Emma said in the beginning is like really just know how to answer the questions and use your like clinical reasoning as best as possible, and when it's coming close to the exam, like, I mean, just try to relax. I think is the best one, and just try to enjoy that time that you have before writing it, and get your head in a good space to actually focus on those questions.
So those of you that were working, you kind of did 1 hour a night starting September. Is that correct? Or kind of like, how early should we be starting? Like, should we start like October, November? I mean, it is in November, sorry, so maybe October.
I got advice from a few working OTs who had written the exam within the past kind of 5 years and more recently, was don't start too early. There's no point. I think like the kind of standard that we were told before we started was like around a month and a half maybe, but no earlier than that. Don't worry yourself. There's no point. So I can't speak to...
I think I did a month before.
Yeah.
Give or take a week.
I know myself included. I went on a trip during September.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I'm not going to start. Like, I just don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to need to. And so I took that time in September to just kind of celebrate, enjoy myself, and...
Give yourself that break. Like, we all were experiencing so much burnout at the end of the program, and I think I told myself October, I'm gonna start studying October, and I remember being like the third week of October and being like, okay, I have to start studying now. But yeah, that burnout is so real, and taking the time to give yourself space to decompress.
I agree,
and we all passed, so whatever we did,
we're all gonna be fine. And that's what I was gonna say, is whether or not you're working and whether or not you're studying for, you know, 2 months before or a month before, like, you have 2 years of experience under your belt. You have the tools at your disposal and in your head to know the answers to most of the questions enough to pass.
Trust yourself.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. We'll be good. Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. We're going to move on to the next topic that was really popular for questions, and that is actually getting a job. So as new graduates, we've heard a lot from other people that it's impossible, especially in Toronto. All of our resumes are going to go into the shredder. That's something that I've heard a lot. So when we're looking for a job, which could take months, what's the best way that we can go about doing it and spend our time just so that we don't go crazy?
I'm really big on life balance is a huge part of my role right now, so I feel like I talk about it a lot, but I like really tried to find a way to schedule my time, and I wasn't working, I wasn't doing a whole lot, and so even something like setting an alarm for 9 a.m. and getting up and going to the gym made me feel like I was doing something every day, and then spending some time looking for jobs, like trying to really organize my time in a way that felt productive and not just watch hours and hours of TV, which makes you feel bad at the end of the day.
Yeah, something that I tried to do while I was looking and didn't have a job was to reach out to people working in positions that I saw myself potentially pursuing and ask them questions about how they liked it and what their day looked like and what their kind of position really was like in real life, as opposed to what I had an idea of in my head. And that helped clarify a few things for me, what I did and didn't want to do. And another thing I tried to do was find, if I couldn't find paying opportunities, I was looking for volunteer opportunities, and I ended up falling into a couple of different really cool kind of alternative therapy OT adjacent volunteer opportunities that have led me in some pretty awesome directions. So I would say think outside the box and, you know, look around for different opportunities that are involved in different disability work or mental health work or marginalized communities if you're interested in that. So that's what I would say helped me a lot before I got a job.
That's awesome.
That's good advice.
Kind of going off what Leia said, if you're looking on a website like Indeed or Monster, don't just search occupational therapist or occupational therapy. Like, you can search for other things like children or pediatrics and find things that, again, aren't necessarily the role saying occupational therapist as the job title, but you can get something similar or something that's related.
I think also to add on is really listen to what you want out of something and listen to where you want to take your direction in OT. And really, it's a lot harder to do from what I've heard, but try not to get yourself wrapped up in what your classmates are doing with job searching, because really figure out what you're doing at your time and go off your agenda, because you don't have to get a job even in the first 4 to 6 months after graduation, even when your colleagues and your classmates, some of them got a job 3 weeks in, right? If you're not ready, if that's not what's on your agenda, you don't have to do it, right? The jobs will come, they'll be out there, and who knows, even after waiting for those 4 to 5 months, that right job popped up at that time for you, and those classmates that ended up getting a job right off the bat because they needed money and they just don't have the time to apply for it missed out on that opportunity. So, I mean, there's ebbs and flows to it, and I think it's just about just trying to pay attention to your own agenda and your own needs.
I definitely agree, and like we said before, keep in mind that you just spent 2 years doing this nonstop. It's true.
100%, 100%.
It's exhausting.
Maybe take a break. You deserve a break.
Yeah, that.
And I found, like, I saw, like what Brett said, I saw so many classmates starting jobs and feeling that anxiety and, like, jealousy, and then really thinking about, like, what they were doing, and, like, that worked really well for them. Mm-hmm. But, like, Emily started working in neuro right away, and, like, I never had a placement in neuro. I like don't want to work in neuro, and so that was had to use that like self-talk of like, oh, that's not for me, but it's for someone else, and being excited for the classmate who it is for.
That makes sense.
So it's like okay to get a job right away, but it's also okay to take that time off, travel.
It depends.
Yeah. Yeah. The magic.
The only OT answer. It depends.
There's no right or wrong answer. It's what's right for you. And if you end up taking a job that isn't right for you, it's also okay. You know, it's not permanent. You can switch jobs. You can take some time off later if you got a job right away and you end up, you know, being like, I need a break now. That's also okay.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, guys. For those of you, actually, no, you all have jobs now. You're all working.
Woo.
How did you guys go about your search? And if there was anything helpful, what was that? So I know Emily mentioned Indeed and that kind of stuff. Like, how did you guys go about it?
To be honest, I just blasted my resume out everywhere, like anything that I could be interested in. I was very lucky in that my placement opportunities were very broad, so I could apply and kind of tweak my cover letter to kind of fit whatever the job positions were. So I just blasted it out, because for me, what I wanted to do was work right away. I wanted to have a little bit of time to decompress, but I definitely was someone who did want that job right away, just because I do like to be busy.
So yeah, just I guess kind of sending it everywhere. So I know there's like a lot of postings online and stuff like that, like Indeed, or there are other engines. Like I know OSOT has a careers opportunity page where they have some there. Like, yes. Are there any other ones that you guys
used? LinkedIn as well. Yes. Especially if you have it in your profile, I think you can have it set that you're an occupational therapist or mm-hmm. occupational therapy student, or you're interested in occupational therapy, mm-hmm. and you can set it so you get job alerts that are related to your field or related to healthcare in general. So I know I found a few jobs that way. Another thing I did was, again, reach out to people I knew in the field, that people I had met through placement, people I had just met or knew before that were working in OT or related fields. And I sent them my resume, or I messaged them being like, I'm graduating. Let me know if you hear of any opportunities. And they did, actually. That's how I got my job, through amazing. Someone I knew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was actually one of the questions someone asked about LinkedIn. So that's nice to know that it's actually is useful for OT.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time on Charity Village, using, like what Emma said, like searching keywords like mental health and community organizations, and a lot of places wanted MSWs or equivalent. You are the equivalent, like we are equivalent, and I just spent some time in my cover letter explaining why it was an equivalent.
That's good to know.
I also took the opportunity at the COT conference to blast out my resume there too. So
that's awesome.
I did. So I just
that's
printed
awesome,
off.
Though.
I printed off like 20 copies, because the COT conference is huge, and it's organizations from across Canada. And take that opportunity to talk to the recruiters, give your resume out, sign up for contests and things, and you'll definitely be hearing from them.
There's also an OSOT conference. I believe it's in October.
I think they actually canceled it this year, right, but
so
it's okay.
Cut that part out.
That's okay. Stay tuned. They might bring it back. It's okay.
The only other place I can think of is to actually check hospital websites. Like sometimes they don't always post them on Indeed or on LinkedIn. So go on their website, go to careers, and actually check for OT postings.
And you can make notifications for those job sites specifically. Like I was on CAMH all the time and got
like
notifications.
Put your email in and
well,
that's really helpful. And then I know Emily and Brett, you guys actually got your jobs from placements, which is amazing. You tell us a little bit about that? Like, how did you do? Because you weren't really looking at postings.
So. Yeah, I was a little different, a little lucky, based on what I had to go through. So I never had to apply for a job. I do consider myself lucky for that. Yeah. But I think there's no real good answer for it. I was never expecting it. I was just trying to get the most out of my placements to try to apply those to any job that I was able to get later on. And also trying to just build relationships. I think that was probably the biggest thing, was to get to know the people that were in your placement setting and just enjoy it as much as possible and try to soak up as much information. And who knows, you might put on a good face and they might end up liking you a little bit and then asking you to come back. Another big strategy I used was I just kept in touch with them. I think my placement for my job was my second placement. So November, December, I think it was like a year before I even got brought on. So it wasn't even my third or fourth placement, it was my second one. And I just, over that year, I just updated my preceptors about what I was doing, how things were going on, and just like, I don't know, just showing my interest in the company as well.
That's so good to know, because so many people like stress about their third placement. They're like, that one's the most important. Like, that's the one I need to get if I want a job at this place.
Yeah.
Nope. So that's nice to know that you can get a job from your first or second.
Yeah, so I'm the cliche to that. I did get my job from my fourth placement. Similar to Brett, I didn't have to do the job search and interview piece, because my preceptor actually is like a practice consultant. So she has a big hand in hiring and normally does the interviews. So her biggest kind of piece of advice was to treat your placements almost like interviews. Like, show you're enthusiastic to be there. You're happy to be there. You want to be there. show how you fit in with the team and how it's easy for them to keep you on. And kind of that was the feedback that I got, is that I fit really well with the team. I was doing a great job. I seemed like I wanted to be there. So they literally at my midterm evaluation offered me a job that I didn't know was.
That's amazing.
That's cool.
Congrats.
Like, they did the eval and they said, do you want a job? And I was like, pardon? And it was just a month and a half contract to start. And she kind of said, like, it just makes sense for me to literally get my provisional and come back and stay on the same unit. And nothing really changes other than they pay you when you come back.
And just to jump in there, what you're saying about how it's like one big job interview, even if you don't get the job out of that placement, you still walk away with an amazing reference for another job.
And they remember
no matter what.
The reference piece is huge. So I guess just try and show that you're happy to be there and you want to be there. And you can have those conversations. I think I did have them with my preceptor, that I was happy to be there. I was like looking, I would take casual, I would take part-time. I just was really eager to be in a hospital. And then they offered it. So it can happen. And I'm definitely lucky. And then I just applied for contracts as an internal. And I've been there since September. So
congrats. That's amazing.
Yeah. A lot of luck.
That also gives us hope.
Yeah.
So,
awesome.
And I know how we're kind of talking about how the placement was an interview in itself, but for those of you that actually went through the interview process, can you tell us a little bit about that and what that was like and how we can maybe prepare for those? Because I'm terrified.
They're scary, definitely. I didn't have that many job interviews. I was also really lucky. I got a job from a placement, but it came afterwards. I did still have to interview for it. But like looking at the company or organization's mandate and like talking about their values, they often ask you, why do you want to work here? And being able to point to their mission, vision, values, and putting those in your cover letter always are good ways to prepare. If you know somebody who works there, reaching out to them. My mentor works for U of T grads. We have mentors for other people. Sorry, I don't know if you do.
Student mentors, you mean?
No. So in practice, and he works at CAMH. So he was somebody that I talked to about jobs at CAMH and like what kind of questions they ask and things like that.
I think another piece that's basically what I did too is looking at the website and knowing like who you were going to interview for. Another piece was knowing about the specific population you're interviewing for. So knowing assessments that are related to whether you're with peds or, you know, older adults or just general population, knowing the assessments that are relevant and the treatments that are common to that population, going in will help you with interviews and situational questions that are given to you in interviews.
Did they ever ask you any situational questions? Like if a client did this, what would you do? Because I feel like as a new grad with no clinical experience, well, besides placement, those can be a little bit challenging.
So I found that every interview I did, there was some sort of conflict question. So whether it was peds-based or not, there is always going to be something conflict-based from my experience. And you don't necessarily have to answer specific to the population. I think you're always gonna have a conflict at some point during OT school, whether it be in study group, whether it be with a professor, whether it be on placement, and you can speak to that. And you can always kind of move the conversation around to talk about how you manage that conflict.
Yeah, that's a really good example that like almost always comes up.
And they want to see, like, they want to be able to see your clinical reasoning, even if that's not clinically, like, so conflict, how do you reason through a conflict and how do you think about that? Something my mentor said was thinking about the CPPF and talking through all the different steps. And ultimately, like, if you don't know the answer to something, be honest about that. Don't make something up, because they'll know if you're lying. And you can be honest, and those things are trainable, those things are learnable, but they can't teach you how to be confident and deal with conflict properly.
Exactly. And you can provide kind of a step-by-step of what you would do if you didn't know what to do. So, you know, I would, you know, talk to a coworker, or I would go to my superior, or, you know, you can say, you know, I actually don't currently know how to do that, but this is what I would do to like gain the knowledge or experience in that situation. I think being honest as much as possible is also really good.
And I think that taking your time with answering questions is okay too. Like in one of my interviews, I said, just give me a minute. I just want to think through the situation you gave me.
and they're totally fine with that. Again, they want to see your clinical reasoning skills, and if it takes you a little bit of time to kind of think about it, that's fine. You don't have to jump into answering a question right away.
Mm-hmm. And some advice more generally about interviews is, even if you don't think you want the job and they offer you an interview, take the interview. It's good practice.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know this is like cliche, but I find, like, for me and for friends who were doing the same interview process, those interviews ended up feeling a little bit better because there wasn't so much, you didn't place so much stock in them and you weren't so anxious going into them that you actually got to be a bit more relaxed in your answers and think things through a bit more clearly. So yeah, practice makes perfect, as they say. So
A piece of advice that the practice lead gave to me one time, it kind of fits with what you were saying, Emma, to take your time, but they said a lot of applicants do well if they use a framework or frame of reference, which I know you're probably sick of hearing from OT school, but they kind of said it helps you, it really does help frame your answer. So if you find you're running in circles or don't know how to answer those more complicated clinical questions, you can even just show your clinical reasoning through a framework or through a frame of reference. Kind of like Maya said, or use the CPPF. They can always teach you the hard knowledge that you need, that you're missing, that that you can use in that practice setting, but it's harder for them to teach you how to clinical reason. So if you show them what your thought process looks like, they can kind of fill in the gaps with the practice knowledge piece. So
that was frame of references coming in handy.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, guys, for your advice. We're actually going to be doing an episode specifically on job searching, interviewing. So stay tuned for that later if you're interested. But that's it that we have for part one. So thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and comment. Any feedback is appreciated. And thank you all to our new grads for being here today. We look forward to hearing more from you in part two.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.